Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Victoria.
We're two friends with a shared love of food, cooking, and all things cookbooks.
We are now in the third season of this podcast. Mm-hmm. And this one is all about, well, not really anything in particular. We are themeless. So you can expect deep dives on certain dishes, reviews of cookbooks, of course, but there'll be new cookbooks, old cookbooks, all sorts of cookbooks. And of course, we'll be asking you, our lovely listeners, for some input on episodes that we're going to do.
It's going to be so fun. And if you love what we do, we're also on Patreon. This means if you'd like to support us, your subscription will help to cover the podcast costs, from the books themselves to the ingredients for what we cook. And in return, you'll get some fun stuff like bonus mini-sodes. To find out more, visit our website, thecookbookcircle.com, or you can find the link in our show notes. Thanks, friends. Now, let's get to the fun part.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Victoria.
How are you?
I'm very well. I am very excited because it's not just you and me on the podcast today. We have a very special guest.
Ooh, how exciting.
We are thrilled to be talking to Sophie Godwin, author of Sunday's Cookbook, and who's a really experienced cook and recipe developer and cookbook writer. So we are thrilled to talk all things food with you. Hi, Sophie.
Hi, guys. I'm thrilled to be here.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good, thank you. Nice weather. Yeah, chipper. Had my grapefruit for breakfast. All good.
Yeah.
With some peanut butter toast, not just grapefruit. Just to clarify.
To make clear. A grapefruit is a bleak breakfast.
That would be a bleak breakfast. Yeah. Do you add anything onto the grapefruit for your, like, a sugar on the top, or just is it straight up?
No, I just like it straight up, but maybe that's because with the peanut butter. If I was eating on its own, I'd have sugar.
Yeah.
I just got back from Barbados last week, and we did a food tour, and they took us to all these, like, food markets where we tried all the local fruit, and it was all horrendously, like, sour. It was like those Gobstopper sweets or something, and the texture was really weird, really weird. But they put salt on all their fruit, basically. So you, like, buy your little bag of fruit, and then they have a little salt thing on the stall, and you just, like, get the salt and you, like, sprinkle it in.
Oh, I love that.
It didn't fully improve the taste, I wouldn't say, but it was, like, it made it more interesting. It was a weird vibe, but yeah, I don't think salt on grapefruit is the one, is it?
It's all just like too. I feel like it could be. I feel like, have you ever seen that video? This is going to be an incredibly weird little segue here, but there's a video because Rihanna, famous recording artist, is Barbadian, right?
She's from Barbadian.
Barbadian.
Bayesian, I learned.
Bayesian, yeah, okay. And I saw a video, a picture of her once, like, with a fresh mango, and then she's, like, dipping it in the sea to eat it so it gets the salt. Like, she's, like, washing it in the sea but also dipping it, and that's apparently because it gets the salty salt water on it, and then, like, you're biting into it. And I was like, That's
clever.
You don't have to leave the beach to eat your mango.
What is your algorithm or search term that's the content that you are getting? Rihanna.
You'll never know. You can try it from my cold dead hands.
Celebrities eating fruit.
Look, everybody's got a kink. That's not mine.
What are your thoughts on fruit, though? Do you know?
You can ask us what our kink was. I was like, different podcast.
Cookbook Circle After Hours. What's our thought on fruit? I mean, I like fruit, but it's it has to be. We bang on a lot in this podcast about like tomatoes and how they're shit in winter, and like you end up eating like loads of crap that's out of season, and it just doesn't taste anything like it should. And it's the same for a lot of fruit, especially in the UK, right? I feel like you just end up eating a lot of apples.
Yeah.
I just also, I don't know, like, okay, for me, like, if I went around someone's house and they served you fruit and yogurt as a pudding, I honestly think it's so depressing. Like, would you not just give me a square of chocolate? Like, it's, I don't know. Fruit. I'm just not that into fruit. You know? I know.
Fruit and yogurt as a pudding is not acceptable.
No.
It's not also acceptable.
There's no texture there. Like, what? Where's the texture? It's all the same. It's baby food. That's baby food.
Yeah, agreed. I'm like, just get out a chocolate bar.
Yeah.
Or at least like roast it or do something interesting to it. Like cook it in sugar.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we are in this country, England, we are a slave to like nice looking fruit, but bad tasting fruit. I feel like it does. It never tastes like, I feel like I don't really like mangoes, for example, because I've never eaten like a good one. I've never eaten a nice one that's actually come, you know, from somewhere good. I feel like it's always just like these horrible like packaged ones from M&S or whatever, and I just feel like I don't really like it. But I know
it's in the sea.
I need to go to Barbados and dip it in the sea.
Is that why you're like longingly looking at Rihanna eating one?
Yeah, it's actually got a picture. I have.
Anyway,
but
we digress as usual.
So as you know, dear listener, what we would usually do when we are talking about a cookbook or a chef or an author is one of us would give a little overview of their career, life, their interests. But luckily for us, we have Sophie here today who can do that herself.
Yeah, so that's reading from the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess, Sophie, first off, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got into food and cooking and recipe development and writing?
All of those things.
Of course.
All the great things.
So I actually did history and English at uni, which I kind of realised in the second year of doing it that I didn't want to. I wanted to be in food, but I also loved my degree.
When
are you ever going to be stupidly hungover speaking about Cold War fiction on a Wednesday morning? Like, never again in your life. And people are so interested in it. So basically, I was like, whatever, this is just, you know, fun.
Yeah.
And then there was this cafe bistro in Sheffield where I went to uni called Marmaduke's. And I used to, like, I loved it. And I basically just went in there after uni and said, I've got no experience, but I don't suppose you'd give me a job in the kitchen with you. And they're a family-owned business, and the dad, Tim, was like, yeah, I'm sure you can come and try. So anyway, I then started working there, and then I worked there for a year and a half as a chef in the kitchen.
Wow.
And the head chef basically he was just so wonderful. He just took me under his wing, and this was like 10 years ago, right? This is like when Ottolenghi Jerusalem's just come out.
Right.
And this cafe, we're cooking like mad vegetarian food, which is also like in the middle of Sheffield. Like, it was quite like, for its time, it was pretty out there. Mm. Like, it was, you know, I'd never used like beetroots in this way or carrots or anything like this. And I was just like constantly being inspired by everyone we're cooking in the cafe. And then essentially that was kind of the starting point where I was like, right, okay, this is what I want to do as my job.
Nice. It doesn't sound like the typical, you know, starting in a kitchen can be really intimidating and it can be bit of a baptism of fire, but that sounds like it was a nice, like, learning, nurturing environment. More of that.
it was amazing. I mean, there was obviously, like, you know, when I got put on like Sunday morning egg service and I was like the only one like poaching, frying, scrambling all the eggs, but I don't know, I think that's kind of then when I realized that I wanted to do it as a job, because I actually loved the buzz of it. It's like almost baptism of fire, you know?
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Oh, and then how did you get into, like, how did you move on to, like, recipe development and cooking for vet? Because you've worked for Mob, is that right?
Yeah. So then after I worked in the cafe and I was like, right, okay, I'm definitely sure that I want to work in food. I was like, right, I'm going to move to London. And then I went and did a hideously expensive cookery course, which was Leafs, but I'm caveating that and said that unfortunately my mum died when I was so small, so I used the money from that to go to the cookery course. But it's one of those things where I'm always feel a bit weird about it, because it has got two groups of people. You either have some people who have, like, saved their entire lives and they're there to, like, start off their new career, or you have some people who are basically being sent there kind of as because their parents don't really know what to do with them and they're like might be doing a ski season, you know. So it's quite a
mix.
It's quite a mix of people.
But
essentially was the best thing ever, because at the time that I went, they offered a 3-month internship at BBC Good Food. So you all had to apply, and then there was kind of one person would get the job for 3 months at Good Food. And when I was there, yeah, it was unbelievable. And it was like one of the reasons why I was like, oh, this would be amazing to go. And so I got down to the final, like 4 of us, and then really amazingly got the internship at Good Food.
Wow.
And yeah, it was amazing. And then they actually kept me on as a food writer after the internship. So I was then there for 3.5 years. So that then started the whole food writing
journey. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. And then I left there like 7 years ago, because I was basically still catering on the side, because I love the food writing, but I've always been like half chefing, half writing. I feel like one informs the other, and also just a bit of variety. I don't know. I love, like, I actually love actually cooking for people. Like, I always want to do that as well as writing. So then I left to become freelance. And then that's when I essentially started writing for other people.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was like a day-to-day like when you were at BBC Good Food then? Were you developing recipes, or was it more like writing content, or what was your kind of role there?
So when you start off, you are a recipe tester. So you basically get all of the recipes for the month in the magazine, and then your day job is to test all of them and make sure that they work, like, are the flavours good? Like, are the timings correct? Are the ingredients accessible? And it's for me, it was like incredible, because you're testing recipes from like chefs and recipe writers from around the world. Like, it's different flavours I've never tried before, different techniques. And you also get really good at recipe writing, because I always say BBC Good Food like honed my writing skills, because essentially they're so strict in their parameters and everything is tested, like triple tested. So you learn, like, you know, 400 gram tin is for 2 people serving, and kind of these kind of very rudimentary but quite key things for actually recipe writing. And then once I'd done that for probably about a year, they then let me have like my first recipe in the magazine. Which was obviously buzzing. And then moved forward for that. Yeah, exactly.
So. Do you remember what recipe?
Same question.
It was a sweet potato spinach lentil dal.
Nice.
So 1 pound. Lovely.
So put it all together and then in there. So yeah, it's really cool.
Oh, that's awesome. And then you have ghostwritten a number of cookbooks, right? And I'm sure that you might be under some kind of NDA to not be able to tell us which ones. but if you can share, that would be great. But how was that in terms of like your, I guess, the process of it and working with the chef? And that must be quite different to obviously writing and testing your own recipes and things like that. So how does that work?
So I think working at Good Food really prepares yourself for that, because essentially when you're writing recipes for magazine format, you'll all have this meeting at the beginning of the month, and it'll be like a pitch for the main feature, which maybe it's a barbecue feature in the summer, or, you know, a twist on something. And then after that, there's kind of allocated features, like they always need midweek meals, they always need weekend, they always need veggie, etc. Mm-hmm. So you're always working within a brief, which essentially is what ghostwriting is. So like you'll have someone come to you and be like, right, we want all of these recipes to be ready in under 15 minutes and they need to have 10 ingredients. So then that's your starting point. And then I know I find that quite creatively stimulating. Like sometimes the kind of weirder the brief, actually, the more your brain has to think, because you can't just be like, oh, I'll just make anything. You have to be a lot more strict, and that's quite exciting. So it kind of depends on the client, but you know, they'll always give you a top line brief, and then some people like to be involved for the whole process, whereas others kind of, they then, you write and test them and then you just hand it over at the end.
Nice. That is so cool. But did that then kind of, did all that kind of ghostwriting then just make you think, okay, I'm ready to do my own at this point? I've done all the practice that one can do to prepare for your own cookbook.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I think like when I first started pitching my own cookbook, I was still such a ghostwriter, because the idea of then having a project which you then kind of sell yourself, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As opposed to kind of you do it, you, and then you give it away, and then it's like their kind of thing. So I don't know, I had to really get into what's my voice. And obviously I'd already established that, because some people say like, oh, I know when it's your recipe because you've got a certain style of writing. But that's only people who like really know me. Like, you know, I've like written like 15 books for other people. So it's
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know. But then there was a point where I was like, no, come on, Sophie, you can do this. This is, I don't know, it was more of a confidence thing than anything, because I had all these recipes. And I remember working on a project, and then I just thought, do you know what, I'm not going to give them that recipe. And that was the first time that I'd thought that way, as opposed to being like, okay, all my best creative ideas I'll hand over. I was like, actually no, I'm going to keep that one. And then I think maybe that was a trigger to be like, yeah, you're ready to write your own.
Oh, well done. That's so cool. And I think we're going to talk obviously about your book, which is called Sundays, which is great. We both have it here. In my opinion, I mean, like I said, I don't know what books you've kind of ghostwritten, but there is so much influence in this book in terms of like different cultures and different ingredients. And, you know, there's Chinese recipes, there's dal, there's tacos, there's all that kind of stuff. And I feel like probably all that stuff that you got from the testing all those recipes for your ghostwriting career has been like super useful. It just means that this book, I think, is very has an eclectic mix. It doesn't fit into a certain genre, I guess, of meal.
I think that makes sense. I don't know, I feel like I do get inspired from everywhere around the world, but then they're all kind of like very much my take on it.
Yeah.
So I don't have any authenticity on like what the best taco is going to be. But I know that if you put a fried egg and a tortilla with some charred chipotle tomatoes, it's going to be banging.
Yeah. So that's it.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely. But yeah. Oh yeah. But with the ghostwriting, I can give like some of them. I had to write, I wrote five books for Heinz, and I had to write a whole book on baked beans once.
So. Wow.
There you go.
How was that?
Do you know what? It was actually really fun, but the worst thing about it was, because I was food styling the book, I was like, how do you make anything not look like beans? I've never before thought, oh God, this whole book is just going to look so beany.
How many cans of beans do you think you had in your house during that time?
Oh, so many.
Did you do anything like really obscure, like blitz? I think I've seen a recipe where they like blitz up some beans and put them in a cake or something.
Oh, no. I think I did like
protein.
A green pie, because I was like, right, I need something which doesn't look beany. So like it was like a cheesy beany pie with like broccoli mash on top, because I was like, at least it looks visually a bit
different. Yeah. Have you eaten baked beans since?
Yeah, I actually still love baked beans.
Wow. I mean, that's a testament to your recipe. Yeah, that's amazing. Did you want to tell us a little bit about your book, Sundays? What's the concept? How does it work as a cookbook? Tell us everything.
Yeah, so Sundays is, as the title suggests, all about cooking and eating on a Sunday. So I don't know, this is like one of my favourite days of the week, just because usually it's the day that I just slow down. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite a busy, like hyperactive person, always rushing around. So I don't know, Sunday is the day where I'm a bit more kind of chilled. But I also think that your Sundays are very dependent on what your week's been, your Saturday, etc. So all of the chapters are separated by kind of eating occasions. You can kind of choose what you want to eat in that moment. So you've got Sunday brunching, because who doesn't want to eat breakfast at any time?
Agree.
And you have, exactly. Then you want slow Sundays, they're just kind of like bung it in the oven and forget about it vibes. We have Sundays after big Saturdays. So it's like your carby, like big bowls of pasta, don't they? The kind of really comforting chapter. We have Sunday reset. So these recipes only serve two, because the idea being is that I know, like, a lot of my friends, like, if they're having a Sunday night themselves, may want to cook something which makes them feel great, but then they can eat it for lunch on Monday. So that's why they serve two, just so they were easier if you're cooking for yourself. Sunday feasting, which is when you have your mates over. And this I took inspiration from my catering work. So each feast serves six people, and there's kind of a bring it together section, so you cook it as if you were chefing. So you don't kind of cook one dish and then think, oh my god, I've forgotten all the sides. You can kind of start it like that. And then finally the puddings, because obviously who doesn't want a bit of cake on a Sunday?
The puddings amazing. In particular are really fun. I think they like yeah. really caught my eye. They're just like the pretzels and the blondies, and then yeah, just loads of really like miso popcorn cereal squares. I love all that stuff. It's like, yeah, we don't need any more like Victoria sponges in our lives. These are like a yeah. bit more creative and fun. I really like that.
And I think that, yeah, like the miso popcorn cereal squares, they're on my want to make list. I feel like that's also, they will last all week, right? Like you make them on a Saturday and like you just, they're just there to munch on all week.
Yeah. And they're super easy. They're literally like cereal squares, but just a bit more.
Yeah.
Something extra.
Yeah, exactly.
Can we talk about this Kinder chocolate cake for a second, which it looks absolutely insane. It's got like Kinder Buenos on top of it. It's incredible. Is that like a favorite of yours? Have you made it for mates and they've just like loved it?
Yeah, exactly. I've made that chocolate cake recipe. I've had a version of that for years, and then that's kind of, it's like the chocolate cake that I always go to. So and then the Swiss meringue buttercream, if you add Nutella to it, honestly I can't tell you how delicious it is. It's literally
like crack.
It's insane. Yeah, exactly.
It looks like, do they still make those Kinder Happy Hippo things in the tiny little guys?
I think they do.
They're like my absolute favorite thing. Those and like the little Malteser bunnies are my chocolate.
Oh my god, those Malteser bunnies.
Which are now
also the Milky Stars. You remember them?
Yeah, Milky Stars were good.
I do like those.
Do you have any particular like favorite recipes in the books? What are your kind of ones that have been maybe a bit of a labor of love, or you kind of make like every week? Are there any particular ones that stand out for you?
I love the India aubergine parmigiana, because that was something that we actually cooked it once at one of our supper clubs, and then it went down so well. And now whenever I do a parmigiana, do that, just because it's just so spicy and delicious. And then I do love the breakfast tacos. They're absolutely delicious. The chipotle pork shoulder with the charred sauce and flatbreads is banging. There's like, in the reset chapter, I'd say that's like a lot of me. Like there's like an aubergine bowl with like a green yogurt kind of dressing, and then salted cashews, and like, so delicious. So my dad's macaroni cheese, having that tonight actually.
Nice. And how does it feel when you release your cookbook and it's like out in the wild? Like, yeah, what's that day like? Are you then like just watching like Instagram to see if anyone's cooking your stuff? What's that kind of feeling once it's out in the wild?
yeah, it was quite nerve-wracking. It was very exciting though. I got to the point where I was absolutely buzzing about it, because I actually had a really amazing phone call with like another chef, and she was like, "You've just got to own it. You've literally got to promote the shit out of it." And I was like, "Okay." And I don't know, when it came out and everyone was being so kind and supportive, it was amazing. Although I do remember we had absolutely shoddy internet connections. I don't know what anyone's saying. That's fine.
Oh no.
No, but it was really good.
Oh. Do you feel like there's any recipes that you're seeing a lot of people making that are kind of resonating with people, or is it a bit of a mix of everything?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mix. Actually, people are going for a bit more. It's like lots of people made the key lime meringue pie, which I was quite surprised about, because it's a bit more of a complex bake. But I suppose it looks really impressive, and if you like baking. A lot of the roasted cauliflower potato curry with garlic naan croutons, loads of that.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of spicy sausage nudes. Yeah, it's a mix. But honestly, that is the best feeling. Like when someone sends a picture of them having made something, I can't even, it's so nice.
Feedback is so important, isn't it? Like we feel the same about, like, we get so many nice messages about this or comments, and like I think people take for granted that you just know it's good, or that like that you're happy with like the product, but I think people can underrate how important that feedback is. So everybody, if you've cooked from Sophie's book, just let her know, okay?
Let her know. Exactly. It's also like the reason for doing it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think that's why I loved ghostwriting for so long, because if I'm writing recipes for Mob, like so many people are going to cook them, you know?
Yeah.
So like, you know, like that's ultimately as a recipe writer what you're aiming for. So to see that happen, that actually people cooking stuff from your own book, it's just kind of like doubly as exciting, because you know, if someone even cooks recipe from BBC Good Food, I get buzzed about that, because I'm just think, you know, you're making yourself something nice for dinner, how great.
I remember talking to like a young chef once, and she was just saying how she was like, this is why we're all in it, isn't it? Like, we just cook to make people love us. Cook to make people like us. And I was like, yeah, that's probably true, actually. Like, it's like everyone who loves to cook is just like showing their love through the form of food. I think it's great. It's got like such variety. I was really, I'm veggie. So when I was like, browsing through, there was loads of stuff that I was really excited about. The banana bread looks really good as well. Mm. I really like the idea of the cheddar and the chili jam.
Oh,
crouton salad. I thought that looked really good.
That's banging. Yeah.
Do you have a particular chili jam that you like?
I think I just go for the Sainsbury's one.
Nice. Accessible. Yeah. We like that.
Accessible.
So at this point in the podcast, usually we talk about what we've made. So Victoria, I'm going to ask you, I'm putting you on the spot, what did you make from Sundays?
So I made two things, but just to say also I have made the peanut butter dal, but I won't talk about that, but it's great. But that was the first thing I made from there, and I also topped it, and I'll send you a photo, Sophie, because I topped it with, because it has like a tarka, and I ate it with tomatoes that I'd grown myself and chili that I'd grown myself, and I felt like a real good homesteading adult.
That's amazing.
Who's that cheesy American chef, the pioneer woman or something?
The pioneer woman.
Yeah,
love her.
Bristol's answer to the pioneer.
So I made two things. The one of them I royally fucked up on, because but I'll tell you about that after, and it's absolutely my fault for being an idiot and not understanding shapes. But we'll get to that. The first thing I made was a cumin lamb pappardelle. I saw that and I was like, that's going to be a huge hit in my house, and love it. But I'm a noodle girl, love noodles. So it's like you said in the intro, like it's a playful nod to Biang Biang noodles, which I feel like it's one of those things that like, if you know what that is, you know, but if not, it's also fine, because you get it from the picture and from the thing. So it's like, they're like flat, generally flat noodles you get at like Chinese restaurants with, like Chinese cumin lamb, hook it up to my veins. What a dream. I love it. And I love this recipe. So what you do is you toast up some spices, so cumin seeds, coriander seeds, and peppercorns, and then put those into a pestle and mortar and kind of bash them up with some salt. And then you then cook some lamb mince. And I loved the way you had us cook this. So it's like you kind of just put lamb mince in a hot pan and kind of break it up and then just cook it until it's like browned and like crispy. And it's just not a normal, I think, way that you would think about cooking lamb. And because it's, you know, you use lamb for its like slow cooking or its tenderness, and so getting that like crispy, but it's so flavorful. Loved that. And then you add you grate in garlic and ginger to the lamb, and then the crushed spices, and mix that all up. And then you kind of take it off the heat. Oh, you add some soy sauce as well. Take it off the heat and then leave it in a bowl to the side. And then you cook your, you start to cook your like pappardelle. There was a dried flat pasta shortage in Bristol when I was cooking this. I was like, I couldn't find any.
But pappardelle is like stupidly hard to find sometimes. Yeah. Like it's, even though it's so great, like it's one of the best pastas. Sometimes like the main supermarkets don't have it. It's ridiculous.
No, I definitely had to use tagliatelle in the end, and a fresh. I had to use a fresh one. I know. But yeah, there was literally, it was just, the shelves were bare for long flat pasta. Anyway, so you cook that, and then whilst you're doing that, you get your pan that you've already used on a really hot heat and cook some Chinese cabbage and some spring onions.
Oh, in, nice.
Yeah, until they're like soft.
Yeah.
And then you add back your meat and you'll see your spiced lamb, lovely, and then you cook your pasta for like until it's like kind of extra al dente, right? Like a 1 minute less than the cooking time, and then you add your pasta into the meat and mix it up, and then melt in some butter and then black rice vinegar or balsamic, whatever you have, and crispy chili oil. Hannah's favourite. Obviously eat lamb, but that is your favourite. And serve. Mix it all up and serve it. This was so good. I really, really loved it. Like, it was not something that I would usually cook or I've ever cooked before, but these, like, flavours are ones I love. I always, if I go to a, you know, very kind of, traditional Chinese restaurant, always order lamb skewers if they're on the menu. So this like cumin, it was great and frankly very easy and a great way to like use lamb in a different way. So I loved it and everyone was a really big fan and we ate an awful lot of this that night.
Great.
Served four and there was only two of us eating it and it did not stay around.
Yeah,
that is great.
I think that you mentioned the vinegar at the end. I think that's something that really stood out to me. It was like you always use a good like balance of acid, which I think can be missing from loads of other recipes. That feels like something that you've probably just like learned over the years of developing recipes. That just makes such a difference, right?
Yeah, and also I think you always need that balance. Like I love like a bit of acid in food.
Have you read Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, or do you have a copy?
So I haven't read it, but I watched her show and thought it was incredible.
It's great. Yeah. We reviewed that book on the podcast. It was like, there's not like tons of recipes in it, but there's loads of like the theory and like breakdown of like different types of all of those things. And it's just great. We love it.
Yeah, it's a great book. I should look at it more.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, so second thing, and my how I mess this up. I'm actually really embarrassed that I'm having to tell you how badly I didn't mess this up. So I made the Andouille Parmigiana. Because you mentioned it and before, and I was like, that sounds great. And then it also in your in the intro, you say how it like this is what caught the eye of your agent when you were pitching the book, and I was like, yes. And I had some Andouille in the cupboard. And I was like, I didn't know what I was going to use it for. So I was like, I'm going to do this. I love it. I love a baked anything. Anything that looks like that when it comes out the oven, like a crispy top.
Yeah, yeah.
And essentially, so I'll keep you all waiting for how I messed this up.
I'm so intrigued how this relates to shapes, by the way.
Yeah, me too.
Just use like a triangular pan or something.
I don't understand. I don't. I'm good at maths generally, but clearly, I don't understand instructions. And anyway, let me get. I'll talk about the general thing because it's absolutely delicious. So you essentially make a delicious like andouille tomato-y sauce, right? And that's shallots, you add your andouille and kind of melt that in, and then add garlic and basil stalks, and then you add some tomato paste and then plum tomatoes from a tin, and you kind of make that sauce and let it cook away for 30 minutes. Delicious. Love that. And then you get lots of aubergines. And you cut, because a Parmigiana is a bit like a lasagna style, right? Like a baked thing. And
exactly.
I don't know if it's because I've got just, you know, a lot going on in my house or because I'm just, like, stupid. But for some reason, I thought when it said like slice the aubergines lengthways, essentially I was supposed to cut them into like sheets like a lasagna, but I cut them into matchsticks because I'm an idiot.
Oh no.
Because in my head I was like, lengthways, yeah, that's
a matchstick.
Oh, interesting.
They were long. Yeah. So instead of like lovely sheets, I had like strips of Oshi. But look, it all tasted delicious in the end. But I was just like, and I didn't even realize until like later in the day. I was just sitting, around and I was like, that was wrong, wasn't it? That was wrong. And I think, like I said, like there's something in my brain that just doesn't comprehend like what words, like in terms of shapes and stuff, like mean, and like my spatial awareness. And I did it, like our last episode was with, we did Molly Baz's new book, and I made this leek pizza, and she asked you to like cut these leeks in a certain way and then do this. And I like, honestly, I had to get her video up to understand like how she wanted me to cut this leek. And I think that's just because I'm dumb. But anyway, with your aubergine, you then kind of fry your aubergine in a pan so that it's with some oil. No, you put your aubergine in a bowl, right, and you salt it and like let some of the water come out, and then you add a load of oil to the aubergine, which is something that I've never done before when cooking aubergine, rather than the pan. So adding it to the aubergine in the bowl rather than the pan, and then you cook that off over a high heat so it's like golden and charred on both sides.
Nice. Because sometimes when you put oil in the pan to cook aubergine, it just like like sucks yeah, it all get, up,
yeah,
it
soaks it up so much. Yeah. You just use a little bit less oil. You still use a lot of oil, but it's less than if it's just in the pan.
Yeah, yes. I also, because I had long sticks of aubergine, I did put some of them in the air fryer to char up.
Oh, nice. Great.
I did like half and half because I was like, this is going to speed up the process of my million matchsticks. So it's going really well. Anyway, so that, so whilst you're doing all this with the aubergines, your sauce is cooking down, and then you take your sauce off the heat, you kind of season it. I did, you put in here, which I really liked, adding a pinch of sugar if needed. And I was like, yes, I think it does need that, because I think it just depends on your tomatoes, right? Like what, you know, their brand and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I did add some sugar, and then you build the Parmigiana. So it's a layer of the lovely tomato sauce, and then a layer of your aubergines, which should be flat sheets, and then more sauce, and then basil leaves, like whole basil leaves,
nice.
Tears, chunks of like teared mozzarella, and like a kind of dusting of Parmesan, and then like, you repeat that for as much as you've got, and then a really nice thick layer on the top of Parmesan and
I thought you said stick layer, that's why I laughed. All my layers were stick layers.
And then you put it in the oven for about 30 minutes at 180 until it's like all bubbly and crispy on top. Mm. And then you leave it to sit for 5 minutes after it comes out, and then you serve. And the taste is so good. Like, it really, really is. Like, we ate it that night. And then there was quite a lot left over. So I put it in like a pita the next day, and made like a fun sandwich out of it. Cause it was great. And like the flavors just develop, and that andouille just hits. And yes, it's absolutely lovely. I really, really liked it. And I love anything that goes crispy on top. I cooked it actually in my cast iron pan, like at my raw cast iron, because that's the best one I had for that kind of thing. And it was great.
Nice.
I loved it, and yeah, ate it the next day and it, you know, frankly, didn't make any difference that I'd done matchsticks instead of
Freestyle and it was those great. Aubergines.
Exactly. They'll do as they're told. I also liked that you have like a veggie option for it. So you said take the andouille out and sub for 1 to 2 teaspoons of chili flakes and a tablespoon of balsamic vinegar instead.
That's great.
And the Parmesan. Oh, but also for anyone listening who lives in the UK or a place where they have it, M&S do a vegan andouille.
Yeah, so it's now out, and so did the Luzu. So it wasn't when the cookbook was written. They didn't have that, but yeah, it's called like vegan.
Oh god, they need to stop with the vegan like play on words.
Oh, but it's actually really good.
Is it? That's so interesting, because I feel like this is something I've been missing out on. Obviously, MD has been like popular the last couple of years. Ooh.
So yeah, I would actually really recommend, because I've tried them and it's actually banging.
Mm.
Oh yeah,
it's a terrible name. But yeah, really good product.
They can work on it.
Yeah, I think that. Do you know what it? Before we ask Hannah what she takes, do you know what it really reminded me of? Or like the flavors were the same. If you've ever cooked Alison Roman's shallot pasta, which has got like she like cooks like tomato paste and anchovies with like loads of shallots, and just makes that into a paste, and then like she puts it. So it's like a I feel like it's an elevated version of that, the sauce, like that sort of, and we love that in our house. We eat it all the time. So love that one, like loved it. Anyway.
Oh, thank you.
Hannah, what did you make?
I also made two things. One of them you've already mentioned. It was the peanut butter dal with tomato broccoli burger. I love a dal. And we did an episode recently for our Patreon members on like the meals that we just cook midweek that you just don't need a recipe for. You just like use whatever you have in the cupboard. And dal was one of mine. But then I never thought to put peanut butter in it. And I was just very excited by this.
We're such peanut butter fans on this. For anything with peanut butter, we're like, we're gonna do that one.
Yeah, like crack. So this is with split red lentils, and you rinse them off first. What I really like as well, your steps. I think they're really clear. Sometimes in cookbooks, sometimes the steps, like one step actually has about seven steps in it, and I think this book is really good at just like breaking them down into really clear ones. So I really like that about this book. So you rinse your lentils, put them in a pan, grate in some ginger and garlic, cumin, turmeric and salt, and then some water, and then you bring that to the boil and simmer away for like half an hour until most of the water is absorbed, and then you make your tarka. So I didn't grow my vegetables for this, sorry. I just picked them up in the shop. So you slice onion, ginger, garlic and broccoli, cut that in half, and you fry your onion with some salt, soften that, and then add in your broccoli and a splash of water, so that kind of steams the broccoli, which is great. And then you kind of turn up the heat and cook for a bit longer so that onion's quite soft and kind of sticky and delicious, and then you add in your whole spices. So I really like that you kind of just say use whatever you have, but you've suggested cumin, coriander, mustard and onion seeds. I think I did actually have all of those, but everyone just has like a store cupboard full of spices. Exactly. Just dying to use. So I like that there's just a bit of creativity there and you can just use whatever you have. And then you add in whole spices, ginger, garlic, and then the whole cherry tomatoes, and kind of fry it all till the broccoli is nice and tender. Take that off and season it, and that's your tarka for the top. And then your dal's kind of ready on the side. I think it's really good as well, both recipes that I cooked, you're kind of like, you start this thing, leave that to cook, go off and do your other thing, so it all feels really just doable. Sometimes I think like things aren't phased right in recipes, and you're like, oh, I could have been doing that while that pasta was bloody cooking or whatever. So once your dal's cooked, then you stir in peanut butter. I used chunky because as far as I'm concerned, that's all that should exist. Squeeze in lime juice, again your acid, so that's really good, and then you slice some chili, and then you just serve it up. So you put the dal into bowls and you top with the tarka, spoon over all the oils and spices and then the chili, and eat with a naan if you're hungry. And it was just great. I really, really liked it. That peanut butter just adds like a certain like creaminess, doesn't it? It's just that bit extra. It's delicious.
And then you get a crunchy pop of peanut from time to time. You're like,
I know. I served it to my boyfriend and I like didn't tell him that he's also like a big fan of peanut butter. And I like didn't tell him that there was peanut butter in there. And he was like, this is really good. Like, and then the next day I was like, you know that there was peanut butter in there. He's like, that's why it was so good. I was like, yeah, I'm just gonna put peanut butter in everything now and not tell you it's like my secret ingredient. But that was delicious, and I feel like, yeah, it's just a great midweek or Sunday, you know, but not if you feel like making it on a Wednesday, it's a great one.
Exactly.
And really quick and delicious. So love that. As did Vic, obviously.
Yeah, I loved it. I made it for lunch one day, like during work. Like, as in, during my lunch break at work, of course. And it's so quick. Loved it. And I think I also gave my son a little bit of the dal, and he liked it as well. Because, you know, of course he likes peanut butter because...
He's yours.
Basically, yeah, he's mine.
A tarka makes such a difference to a dal as well, right? Like, just...
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And then the second thing I made was in the reset section, and that was the pea feta and hazelnut risotto.
Very nice, yeah.
So this
love
looks...
the risotto.
I love a risotto. I really do. I've made ones for the podcast before. They are just like my ultimate comfort food. And I think making a risotto is really mindful because you have to stand at the hob and just stir it. And it's great. But what's lovely, I love the hazelnut addition to this for some crunch. I think that just makes all the difference. So this was really easy as well. So you toast your hazelnuts, you weigh out some frozen peas and kind of set them aside to defrost. You chop a shallot, or a shallot as Vic Fifth now apparently says, or an onion, and kind of cook that down with some salt. Chop some garlic, you chop your toasted hazelnuts and you pick your mint. Then you add your garlic into the onions and you tip in the rice so that it gets coated and all that lovely, delicious flavour. Toast that and then you pour in some white wine. And then when the wine's been absorbed, you add in your stock, which your vegetable stock, which you have on the side, kind of boiling and simmering away. And you, yeah, like a typical risotto, kind of keep stirring, adding ladle by ladle until it's all absorbed and the rice is kind of nice and tender, but still with a bit of texture. But the fun part to this is when you, what you do with your peas. So I've made pea risottos before, and I think I've always just been really lazy and I plop them into the stock that's boiling on the side so that they just kind of cook and then you're just like lumping them into the risotto. But actually, by the time you're serving, they've like withered into within an inch of their lives and it's not very fresh tasting. So I love this approach where you blend half of the peas with a tablespoon of vinegar and mint, loads of salt and pepper and some water. So you make this lovely, like, bright green puree. And then once the rice is kind of cooked, you stir through that pea puree and the other half of, or the remaining whole peas as well. So you've got like peas two ways. you grate in your parmesan and season, add a bit more vinegar if you like, which I thought was great because I've never added vinegar into a risotto. And again, we love the acid and it makes such a difference. And then, yeah, you just dish it up, but you crumble over some feta, scatter over these hazelnuts, which just like makes such a difference for adding a bit of texture in an otherwise quite like soft meal. And then the remaining mint leaves. You said you like to finish it with a splash of Tabasco, which I thought was great.
Yeah, I love Tabasco and risotto.
Yeah.
Delicious.
And this was great too. And yeah, it was really flavorful. It was really fresh. It feels like frozen peas are like, yeah, vegetables are crap in winter, right? But like, at least with peas, frozen peas, you feel like it's a bit springy or it's a bit fresher than just your old kind of like rooty veg that you end up eating in November. And I thought it was great. It was perfect amount for two. We still had like a little bit left over, which I have for lunch the next day, and it still tasted great. So yeah, I loved it. I'm going to blend my peas from now on.
That's my one of my best mate Pops' favourite as well.
Oh, that's really cute. Yeah, you've got lots of little like dedications throughout the book, which is really cute. Yeah. I bet your mates love having you around.
Well, me and my husband, we lived with Pops for like 5 years. Well, I lived with her for 5 years and then Ad moved into our house, into the girls' house.
Nice.
So basically those two were the chief recipe testers for Sundays.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
The dream. Vic, you mentioned a couple of other recipes that you would like to make. Was there anything else you wanted to give a shout out to?
Yes, the braised butter beans with the herby yogurt. I had all the stuff for that and I still have this, like, what I mean by that is wine. I don't often have like white, because you need white wine for the braising and that, so I bought some like little bottles you know, just like people in the shop thinking I'm some kind of strange weirdo buying all these bottles. But anyway, yes, so I'm gonna make that at some point, because I also have become obsessed with bold beans recently since they've been available in Sainsbury's.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Bold beans are everywhere. Revolution.
Good. So that's on my list. And the grandma pizza, because yes. I can't turn down a lovely pizza. And your flatbreads, because I'm also into making like flatbreads at the moment.
Well, yeah, both those bread recipes I actually have to kind of add, which I do in the He Used to Be a Sourdough Baker. So the grandma style pizza we actually developed because he made it and it was absolutely banging, but it was this pizza that you had to turn and fold, and I was like, babe, it's in the hungover section, like, you kind of just want to put it in a bowl and then forget about it. So then we redeveloped it, so it's just kind of literally mixed, tip, done.
Nice.
Amazing.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do that. Hannah, how about you for your things you'd like to make?
Yes, lots. Cheesy leeks on toast, just love a leek and anything on toast. The miso corn rice looks really good as
well.
Yeah,
that's banging. Yeah, that's delicious.
Next level dauphinoise, just living up to the stereotype, but anything potato I am a big fan of. And then just all those desserts look really fun. The peach honey and yogurt pavlova looks just really delicious, such a nice like summer dessert, and the yogurt's like nice and tart with the sweet peaches. I think that looks delicious. Loads. I really like it. I'm actually gifting, hopefully he's not listening. No, I don't think he's listening. He doesn't listen. He's not that good a friend after all, but I'm gifting this book to my friend who also loves Sunday cooking, Roberto. So yeah, it's going, we're spreading the joy further out in the world.
I think you'd love the anchovy cabbage spaghetti as well. It doesn't have a photo, but it's raisins and shallots and a little bit of vinegar, so they kind of lightly pickle, and then you fry up loads of anchovies, garlic and cabbage, and then you add the spaghetti and then the kind of lightly pickled shallots and raisins. It's really delicious.
That sounds like we would both love that. We love anchovies.
It's my one exception to being vegetarian.
I think that's fair.
Just as a little salt bomb, right? It's fine. It's fine.
Can you tell them that as they're swimming through the sea, Vic? Because you're bashing them with your mango.
Salt bomb, salt bomb. Question to them.
What's next for you, Sophie? What's any more cookbook plans? What are you up to for the next while?
Me and my husband actually have a company called Scramble. So we do catering. So we do like hen parties, weddings, birthday parties, all that. So next year we've got a lot of really amazing, lots of weddings we're cooking for from recommendation.
Nice.
And then we've actually got a couple of writing projects out very soon, which is so exciting. Just kind of pitching for new cookbooks. We've just done a pop-up restaurant in Old Street, which was quite fun. So amazing. And then obviously having a baby at some point and then probably life changing forever, but incredibly naive to that fact.
Cross that bridge when you come to it.
Yeah, exactly.
That baby's just going to be like stuck to your hip as you're in the kitchen.
100%.
Ratatouille style.
Exactly. I've got like a catering job this weekend and I'm getting like progressively more pregnant. I'm just like, it's fine.
Just, Vic, didn't you once cook with Marcus on your front when Andy like put his head a bit too close to the oven?
Opened the oven to get them and I was like, oh shit, is he just asleep? Like, you know, after a while you're just getting on with it and I was like, oops, the hot air. He's fine though, like he's made it to two, so I guess before we go, Sophie, we would love to know your favorite cookbooks of all time. What ones do you love?
Okay, so I actually love, do you know the Duck Soup cookbook by Claire Patak? Just because I was obsessed with that restaurant and it's got some really interesting cool techniques in there which I really love. I love like Plenty and Plenty More. I feel like everyone does. I love Georgina Hayden's Stirring Slowly.
Yes.
That's one which I always return to. I think it's such a beautiful cookbook. And I think the way she writes, she's just an amazing recipe writer. Yeah. I think
we love her. We did Nistissima for the podcast and it's so good. It's such a, she's great. Yeah. We love you, Georgina.
Yeah, exactly. There's some really cool cookbooks coming out there. I think it's like a good time for like different generation of writers. It's really cool.
Yeah, and really exciting, yeah. Like different, diverse cuisines as well. Like
exactly,
I think, it's really exciting. Thank you so much for joining us, Sophie. It's been such a joy having you here.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
We love Sundays.
We love Sundays. So that is out. Is it out now everywhere in all countries?
It's out in Australia and America and here.
Great.
I think, yeah.
There are three biggest ones. Hi, guys.
What's your Instagram so everyone can go and follow you?
Oh, thanks. Sophie on a plate.
Lovely. And so go follow Sophie, buy her book. And if we can find them online and they're available, we will put the recipes on our website. So we'll do that for these ones that we've talked about. If not, go buy the book. And thank you so much, Sophie, for joining us.
No, thanks for having me, honestly. It's been great. Well, also, I was listening to your guys' podcast when I was doing a catering job last Friday, and it actually kept me going for like the whole day. Because now I want to buy the vegan baking book, because those, what were they, those, should you say the
Lamingtons?
They sounded insane.
They're so good. Yeah. I would really, really recommend them. And great for like vegan, if you have to do any vegan desserts for catering or whatever. I feel like
they're
so good and they keep really well. So I would, that book is great, actually. That I think book that's is such a great. Game changer.
Yeah.
We loved it.
Yeah. Only so many times you can make a vegan chocolate tofu mousse.
I know. I know. I feel like he's really up the game.
Exactly. That's good.
And it's like, we talked about it on the podcast, but it's not too, there's no weird ingredients or like strange things. Like it's all very like, natural, like stuff you can just buy. And I've made those Anzac cookies like five times since we did the pod. I love them.
Amazing. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for listening.
pleasure.
Thank all you guys for listening too. We'll be back soon with our next episode. Thank you, Sophie. Right,
thank you.
Bye.
Thanks,
guys. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave us a review, as it helps others to find us and enjoy us. You can see how the recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram at Cookbook Circle, where you can also get in touch with us, let us know your thoughts, feedback, ideas for episodes, whatever you like. We really love to hear from all of you. So we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.